Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Happy New Year, everybody. 2022. It is the Huddle Breakdown. I'm Enda Call. Jacob James is on the line with me, and so is Alan Morrison. Happy New Year, guys. How are you getting on?
Happy New Year. We're punctual this year. You've set a precedent now, so don't screw it up, Enda.
Yeah, we're only 1 minute late, which, I mean, that's record time for us. Listen, it's been a long time. We haven't had a podcast in a couple of weeks. We haven't had football in a couple of weeks. It's been quite boring, to be honest. It feels like there's a bit of a void in my life over the last couple of weeks with no Celtic to watch and no frustration to take out and at the weekend. So we're going to do a mid-season review because we didn't really get to do it before Christmas because the matches were just relentless before the Christmas break. And it was almost just reviewing the games more than anything else. So we're going to do that now before we get back to football next week against Hibs. There's a lot to get into this season. It's almost hard to remember. We started the pod extraordinarily early this season. We actually did pre-season reviews of some of the games. So it seems like a lifetime ago since those took place. We're not going to touch on pre-season. We will potentially touch on the Champions League, the Europa League, and some of the other things that happened this season. So just a sort of a broad outlook of where Celtic are at in terms of the season so far. In the league, they're second in the league, 6 points behind Rangers in the table, won 14 games, drawn 3, lost 3, scored 42 goals, conceded 12. So that is the league. And if you want to know how that compares to this time last year, they played one extra game. They have 2 extra points than they did last year. So depending on how that game fell, you know, Neil Lennon's Ranger Celtic might be on par with Ange Postecoglou's Celtic. One more game this season. The difference is, and the key difference is, that Rangers have failed to win 4 of the games that they won last year this season. So that's why the gap is much more narrow in terms of the league form. European football, most important for Celtic, obviously. Didn't qualify for the Champions League, got knocked out by Midtjylland at the final hurdle. Europa League group stage, finished 3rd behind Real Betis and Bayer Leverkusen, ahead of Ferencváros, and now playing in the Conference League and are playing after Christmas. That's where we're at so far. Alan, if you could describe the season so far in 3 sentences, how would you do it?
One word. It's been chaotic, really. Everything is, you know, a new manager, a huge turnaround in players, a huge number of injuries and disruption to the team. A very particular way of playing football that is trying to be embedded within the squad. A high pressure season because of the Champions League bounty at the end of it. So it's just made it, I think, a really kind of tense and difficult season so far. But in amongst all that, I think there's been some hugely enjoyable football, a lot of hugely enjoyable football, actually. And it's almost a shame that there's such a bounty at the end of the season, because I think if this were, I don't know what a normal season is, actually, to be fair, but if there wasn't such pressure on it this season, I think, you know, we would be building towards something pretty special. I still think we are building towards something pretty special, but I think what is making this, you know, and James talks about, you know, people's mania swaying from one extreme to another, and I think that's partly, as well as other environmental factors that we're all living through, but it's partly because, you know, on the one hand, we could have an immensely successful season in terms of performances and playing style and entertainment and goals and all that sort of stuff, and it could still be a disaster. And that's what I'm struggling still to get my head around. I think probably a lot of other people are as well. Sorry, that was a lot more than three sentences that you asked for.
Listen, I'll allow it. We'll next in 2023, we'll get it even tighter than that. James, I said that Neil Lennon's Celtic could actually be on par with Ange Postecoglou's Celtic in terms of points on the table at this point in the season, but they're not the same. They're just not.
No. I noticed in our comments chat from the people watching live on YouTube that John Madden just messaged us from the grave. I thought he died last week, but John Madden just said one word, entertaining, and he stole my word because that was what I was going to say.
That's what Strange Love the Doctor also says.
Oh, he did. Okay. I didn't see Strange Love. Oh, there we go. There we go. Yep. So, it's interesting, the disparity in narrative relative to where we're at, right? So if you look at, the relative performance in the Europa League, we were a lot better in attack, right? We failed, we failed to qualify for Champions League. That's the same. Outside of a new tournament in Europe, which wasn't there last year, to even theoretically qualify for, we wouldn't have made it post Christmas. And we gave up a lot of goals this year. We gave up a lot of goals last year, but we scored a lot more this season. And the league table is very similar. If you assumed we had kind of won some of those fixtures last year that had piled up a little bit. So the disparity there is not all that significant, as you said, Enda. But the narratives are miles and miles and miles different. And I think some of that is just because of how crazy last season was, the lockdowns and, just the chaos that was going on around the club, as well as just everybody, the way we were living. And I think there's just been an exhale this season, and there's been this beacon of hope with Ange that has really helped, I think, just our collective psyche and the enjoyment and the football has been a lot more enjoyable in a lot of ways because it's been a lot more attacking. We talk about this regularly, the measurable output as far as chance creation and that kind of stuff. So the underlying metrics are better this season. But it's from a results perspective, they're actually a lot closer than you might think, which again, analytically, I would argue is its own incredible result given the disparity in talent levels and the wage bill coming down and how relatively ineffective the summer window was. So entertaining is the key word, and I think the fascination with how much that's been important relative to kind of just exhaling and enjoying the season so far, when actually the results are kind of not that much different.
Yeah, Neil Lennon's burner account on Twitter would certainly argue that it's the same thing.
What you said at the beginning is really important. And in terms of, one of the reasons I started doing what I do with Celtic by Numbers was this fallacy that the league table doesn't lie, right? So, if you were off the mind that all you did was look at this season's league table and look at last season's and say Celtic are 2 points better off, why did we change manager? We're no better. And what you're then doing is actually ignoring all the underlying data that talks about performance. Then that is basically why we're here.
So yeah, there you go. big time. And I also don't have the results to hand, but if memory serves me correctly, Celtic absolutely tanked in early November, but then had a six game run before Christmas where they basically won every game. So again, you're talking about different animals.
Yeah, that run in December, if you think about it, I know I've talked about this previously and how Celtic have in the past, even under Rodgers and that unbeaten season, you're grinding out results. But think about it, if you're a St Johnstone or a St Mirren, right? You're playing all those games in December. That's a really tough ask for small squads like they've got. So Celtic should be winning all the games in December, even if they're not playing well, because the opposition are really stretched in that regard as well.
Yeah, and I recall correctly, I think we had maybe three games in hand, something like that, going into the new year. And
it was 22, 22 games played for Rangers, 19 for Celtic.
Yeah, so if we had won the derby at the New Year last season, which, you know, obviously we didn't, but it was a very close game, and, you know, it was kind of nip and tuck. They scored on an own goal. People forget. Some people forget anyway. That was the one way they didn't even have a shot on goal, really. You know, it would have been so tight, and, you know, Dubai, you know what I mean? So there was a lot of, I think that the people were so crazy last season for so many reasons that, you know, this is why I was so critical at the time, is that we could have pulled things back with some smart decisions earlier than they made them, because of the spiral that was happening. But yeah, it's thank God it's over. The hope and the enjoyment and the entertainment, you know, that's been back. So that's probably the best part of it all.
Yeah, exactly. The final thing I will say comparable to last year is that we're about a week away from the Dubai debacle in terms of a year anniversary. So will we do an anniversary piece on that? I don't think we will. I think we'll let that die in the memory of Celtic fans. One massive talking point for this season, the narrative going into the season, was the rebuild. So I don't want to spend too much time talking about the board level rebuild. More importantly is the on-the-field rebuild. Celtic had an extraordinary amount of turnover when you're talking about players this year. Kyogo Furuhashi came in, Starfelt, Abada, Juranovic, Giakoumakis, Joe Hart, Liam Scales, Liam Shaw, Uzai Urigide, James McCarthy, Jota. That's just some of the transfers that have come in. Added now, Daizan Maeda coming in, Yuzuki Itaguchi and Rio Hatate to be added into that squad. A lot of outgoing players as well, players that Celtic have been looking to get rid of for a couple of years now. Lee Griffiths has gone on loan. You know, there's been several players that have finally been shown the door at Celtic, and probably more to come now in the January transfer window if you look at the players they're bringing in. We'll start with the players that Celtic have brought in and sort of rebuilt the squad with. Alan, the top performer for me is definitely Kyogo. I think he's the one that transforms the side the most. But if you were to pick your transfer so far that has probably impacted the team the most, who would you pick?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of transfers in, clearly, you know, he has been the standout. I mean, it's just so exciting to watch him play, first and foremost. You know, and then status is a cult figure and a leader within the team, you know, cemented by, you know, two cup-winning goals off of one leg, which is brilliant. But, you know, the humility that he shows as a person, the work rate, the endeavour, the ability to clear the pitch of all rubbish is just, you know, exemplary, really. And also the fact that, you know, his coping mechanism. So there was some hard of thinking person on Twitter that sort of said, you know, Celtic have bought this striker, he's 5'7" and, you know, blows over like a feather. And the way that he's coped, the way that he copes with the sort of many hammer throwers in the league, and works around that physicality aspect, I think has been wonderful. And the fact that it winds the heart of thinking up so much, the way he copes with it is just so entertaining. But in terms of, you know, he's scored, he's averaging about one scoring contribution every game, which is exactly what he's expected. 92% of his shots come from inside the box. I mean, who doesn't love that? He has a scoring contribution every 28 touches, which is so far top right of recent Celtic strikers, even Edouard and Dembele. It's ridiculous. You know, in terms of, I have a final third effectiveness stat, which is, you know, how much of possession in the final third results in either a shot, a chance, at least a corner, but not just giving the ball away or nothing happening. And he's at like 57%, which again is way top right of Celtic strikers. So he's just been phenomenal. Easily the best of the signings. I don't know if we're going to cover kind of players of the sort of half season outside of signings, or do you want to leave that for?
Yeah, no, we'll do the player of the season so far, outside of the signings as well. So I mean, James, do you want to give me your transfer?
Yeah, go on.
Ditto. I think that's the obvious one. So, in the spirit of time, I'll just say ditto.
Okay, sorry, Alan, I cut across you there.
Sorry, I was just going to wander on for hours. Carry on.
I'll go to the play because I. actually put some thought into this for a change, and you'll be proud of me. I put some thought into
2022, new man.
The production that you gave me going
into this.
It's all
different now, isn't it?
I know. So, I looked at a bunch of different stuff, and the one challenge with, let's say, Jota or Kyogo, is if we're just talking about, you know, contribution for the season so far, is, you know, Jota didn't show up until after the window. And so there was some big games in there that he didn't play, obviously. And then he got hurt right at the end or towards the end. Kyogo was out hurt and wasn't in right away for preseason, that type of thing. So to me, there's one standout from a value perspective, and it's Tony Ralston. And, you know, again, forget about, you know, is he better? Is he good? Just measuring output. What did he do and that contributed to winning games and winning points? And you know, he was not only was his output significant, it was consistent. And it was pervasive, meaning that it wasn't just that he, you know, created a lot of chances for teammates. It wasn't just that he was solid defensively or just progressed the ball or just even scored goals, which he kind of contributed in a significant way across the board. And he did it in Europe as well, which I'll be honest was surprising to me how well he was able to do. You know, I'm still skeptical that that's a long-term solution, but, you know, just again, measuring actually what he did to contribute to the team's performance levels. I think to me, he's the standout because he was there the whole time. They flogged him to death, which contributed maybe to him getting injured there when he did. So I think, you know, to me, he's the standout.
Okay. Interesting. I think Tony Ralston, I think, has surprised everybody. If somebody tries to argue that they always saw this coming from Tony Ralston, I think they're definitely blagging their way through it. But he really has been exceptional, both defensively, and he's added a lot more to the attack than I would have expected as well, in terms of just getting forward and being able to continue to do his own job as well, contributing to the attack as well. I'm going to give mine to someone who I think we all were also surprised by, and on the huddle break, then we might need to issue an apology at some point in time about James. I'm not sure you'll agree, but I'm going to give it to Joe Hart because I think the level of cool-headedness that he's brought to the team. And we spoke about when we did a Joe Hart special, we spoke about the intangibles that come with him in terms of his leadership, in terms of his experience, all that. And amazingly, that is actually what has been had a massive impact for me is the experience that he brought to a team that was in a state of flux with the defense, the injuries, the amount of game time. And he really has been the leader within the Celtic team this year, outside of the obvious in Callum McGregor. Not only that, he's backed it up with some really good performances in terms of shot stops in the Europa League, in European football, as well as, you know, he may have had a couple of mistakes here and there when it came to his early days. But all in all, it has been a massive upgrade on what Celtic had last year in terms of the goalkeeping, in terms of organization, in terms of being able to communicate with the manager of what needs to be done. I know there's that famous clip that he went over to Ange and said, right, we need to change it up a little bit here. And that's what they did, and it helped him. But I think he's improved Celtic no end this season, and he's been a vital player.
Can I set the record straight? Because I think there's some confusion on my my position on this. Is not that Hart hasn't been good, because objectively he has been. What I've written about is that there's a fundamental misunderstanding of the value that Barkas had last season. And if you look at the performance of Celtic with Barkas last season relative to Bain, we conceded double the goals, roughly. I haven't been critical of Hart in anything that I've written. He has been good this season. I just think that there's a misunderstanding about what made Barkas valued last season, including, it seems like, people at the club didn't appreciate that either, because they obviously benched him and went a different direction for the remainder of the season. So yeah, it's more of an underappreciation of how the quality that Barkas was, knowing that his shot stopping was bad, right? So I wrote a whole piece about that. That was objectively bad, but he does other things well that kind of offset it and overwhelmed it, actually. So that's the point. It's not anti-Hart. It's maybe, you know, different perception on Barkas.
Okay, you're a Barkas shagger. That's all I'm here.
I had no point arguing he should be number one this year either, because it seemed like that ship had sailed, meaning that, you know, it looked like it was time for a divorce for whatever reasons that have gone on. And who knows, as an outsider, because again, as much as we talk about stats and everything, I always thought the human part of all of this is always the most important. Because it's the humans that do this stuff. So, you know, it seemed to have reached an irreparable point, and Hart has objectively been good. There's no question about that.
Yeah. I'm only taking a piss anyway. Alan, who is your player of the season so far, mid-season?
Yeah, I looked at different, sort of, as you imagine, different criteria. Yeah, I think a shout out to those that have done the most work, right? So, you know, if you look at the from 1 to 4, Turnbull, Hart, McGregor, Ralston, they're the ones that have done the most work. They've been on the pitch for around about 30 games each. They're the ones that have put the hard yards in, done the minutes. I've talked about Kyogo, and you know, he would be my player of the season so far, but just a few shout-outs amongst the rest of the squad for things that caught my eye. I think we talked about Turnbull a lot, and actually he leads the team in creating chances from open play. And we talked about this last season as being this is where we'd want to see Turnbull improving. And 2.38 chances from open play. He creates the most chances overall, 3.8. And he has the highest expected assists, 0.46. So I think Turnbull is going to be a big miss. We're going to miss him for quite a while. Whether that is offset by the balance of having somebody more athletic in there alongside Rogic could actually be better for the team, but I think we'll definitely miss Turnbull, and he's shown to me demonstrable improvement, which is what I'm always looking for, especially from a young player. Rogic has got the best assist rates, 0.46. I think with Rogic as well, what he's added to his game is he's been asked to play more as a number 8 than a number 10, and that's, if you think of Rogic, you think of he always plays one position, and so the fact that he's adapted at 29 years old into a slightly different, well, quite a different role, actually. And what has been the big leap forward in his game has been his, and this has almost become a signature move now in the team, is Rogic receiving the ball in that inside right half space, receiving it on the turn, under pressure, moving forward with control and taking the team up the pitch. And that signature move, is we've seen it so many times, often receiving the ball from Carter Vickers. That partnership that Carter Vickers and Rogic have got, right centre back to sort of inside right pass, has become a real feature of the season. Carter Vickers, then, you know, he is the most creative deep passer, 13 pack passes a game. He's also got the best defensive stats. His defensive action success rate is 80%, which is my benchmark for, you know, 80% and plus is into your Ayers, your Julien, your Van Dijk, your Benkovic territory. So he's there. He's in that upper echelon of defenders that Celtic have had in the last 6, 7, 8 years, that it would be the sort of top of that. And his possessions, the possessions that he wins from defensive actions, is 95%. So he's firmly in that top right corner, Carter Vickers. So there are others that I think deserve a special mention. I've not even touched on Jota or Abada, who have both, I think, been excellent as well. But those are the sort of some of the highlights for me from some of the other players. But I think, Kyogo is clearly the standout.
Mm. This is the Huddle Breakdown. It's our first podcast of 2022. If you're watching on YouTube, do hit the subscribe button and hit the like button as well, because it lets more people see the video. You can get our podcast on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you get your podcast as well. We've spoken about our best performer so far, our best transfer so far as well. Let's talk about the disappointments so far. I'm not sure there's been many massive disappointments in terms of performers in the Celtic team so far, but we'll pick through a couple of them. One that I want to throw out there, and look, I almost feel bad already putting him out there as one of them, but I suppose you have to be honest as much as you can on this. And I've been really disappointed with Montgomery so far this season and what I've seen from him, just because, you know, when a young player comes in, you want to see them do well, you want to see them develop. And just from what I've seen from him this year so far, I just have my doubts now whether or not he's going to be a Celtic player in the future.
Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, so when I was thinking about biggest disappointments, I was almost thinking of, you know, what are the anti Ralston. So Ralston is and Bitton, actually, who I wanted to mention, are great examples of players that you think, well, they're never, what role really have they got in the forward looking Celtic team? Not just in the fact that there was no great history of recent great performance, but also you couldn't see how they would fit into a Postecoglou team either. And on the other hand, because of just the absolutely mental number of injuries that the squad has had, so many players have had opportunities. And I think it's the ones that have had the opportunities and not taking them that has been the biggest disappointment for me. So players like Soro, who broke into the team last year, he had a good run of games this season and just seemed like he became skittish, erratic. Whether it's self-confidence or not, I don't know, but just no development there, really, or no forward momentum in terms of his career at Celtic. I think Montgomery is a little bit harsh. The kid's been moved around a lot. But again, you know, has he actually got better the longer he's been in the team? No, he hasn't. And maybe he needs a bit of protecting and a bit of time out of that glare of the first team. Ayeti got a run of games. I've been really, really positive about Ayeti since he joined, because I think his basic underlying numbers, the positions he takes up, his finishing ability is fantastic when he gets a chance, but he's just not taking his chance. He just, again, he looks laboured. When he did get in, because there was no one else standing, he immediately, you know, blew his hamstring up trying to press the ball, which seemed like a completely alien thing for him to try and do. I think in terms of other players that have been disappointing, I'll just touch on a couple more. I've got to say McCarthy. I was curious, very curious, really, as to what we were going to get with McCarthy. And what we've got is a very, very specific set of skills that I don't think we really need as a priority. And I don't think he's going to offer much beyond those very, very good, very high-end skills for what he does. But to me, he's got as much mobility as Roy Keane had in the short time he was with us, 13, 14 games, where he later said he felt he was stealing a wage. I don't think McCarthy's mobility looks much better to me than that. And the final one, which will maybe cause a bit of consternation, is actually Starfelt, because I defended Starfelt, but his stats are horrible. the way I judge centre-backs is through defensive action success rate and then possessions won through defensive actions. I mentioned this with Carter Vickers and how he's pushing into that top echelon. Starfelt on those numbers is right down in the lowest bottom left corner. Now, what I will say is, does it matter? Right. And the reason I say that is because for Postecoglou, is somebody flying into headers and winning headers and clearing the ball, is that really important to Postecoglou? I suspect it isn't. And I suspect Starfelt has some other attributes that make him quite important to the team. But it's not just the fact that he mainly fails in his defensive duels. That's really his aerial duels. That's really what brings his stats down. It's the number of errors, 19 defensive errors. That's 10 more than anyone else. You know, I look at 0.5 defensive errors per 90 minutes as my benchmark. If you're in that red zone above 0.5, then I'm not happy. And he's at 0.75.
How does that compare to Shane Duffy?
Shane Duffy was about, it was in that space. But Shane Duffy's defensive metrics were actually really good because he was a very dominant defender. Starfelt he's got easily the worst aerial stats of any central defender I've come across. His defensive stats are almost identical to Bitton playing central midfield, okay? So credit to Bitton, he's got really good defensive stats this season playing midfield. But Starfelt is really like having Bitton back in defence in that sense, and we all know how that kind of worked out. So, Overall, I'm still wanting Starfield to succeed, and I still want to look at him in a more rounded sense. And what I'm saying by that is his basic numbers are terrible, but I think there's other things he probably brings to the team. And the one that's really disappointed me the most, if I had to pick one, would be a Yeti. He really did. I really had high hopes he would be the type of striker Celtic needed.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot to undress there. We might do a Starfelt specific podcast, well, maybe look a little bit deeper into him. The James McCarthy one, James will bring you in just in a sec. The only reason I won't have James McCarthy down there as a disappointment is that my expectations were so low when he was signed that he's actually performed exactly how I expected, and he's played as much as I expected him to.
Fair dues.
I have my little scratch it note here. I don't know if you can say it. It says Starfelt as disappointment right there. For me, it's not even close. And I'm analytically, and again, it's not personal. I actually like all of the players on the team this year. Like there's none that kind of, you know, rubbed me the wrong way or, you know what I mean? Like they all seem like good guys, and they're all, there's that ethos that's going on in the side that seems genuine. So I like Starfelt, but I think I'm ready to stick the fork in it and say it's done. I had a lot of worry that he was not a good fit when we signed him. The fact that his price tag was as high as it was for within the context of Celtic at, I think it was $4.5 million, something like that. His age profile, meaning that his sell on value is probably not going to be anything great. He's probably closer to like a Julian in that perspective. And to Alan's points, when I look at his ensemble of data, not just any specific area, but I talked about how well Ralston's done. Outside of being very safe with his passing, which we talked about when we signed him, that was his profile. Like he's, you know, incredibly conservative with his passing and efficient in that way. I mean, he's good at being super safe. Let's put, you know, give him that credit. Outside of that, he's just not been good. And I think that the narrative that shifted because we switched how we were playing that kind of protected him a good bit in that kind of September, October into November period, allowed this narrative that they're forming this great partnership and all of that. My concern, not only do I think that he's been the biggest disappointment because of everything that Alan said and the price tag, and that we need him to be good, is as we shift our style of play back towards Ange ball with these new guys coming in, I'm worried that he's going to continue to be exposed more with the deficits that he has, playing the high line, not having the pace, and, you know, not being good on the ball. In any kind of ball progression or creative sense or beating guys 1v1 with the dribble. Disappointment, and he's probably my single biggest concern heading into the second half of the season on top of that. And I think ultimately he's probably going to be a bad financial decision as well. So that's a three-dimensional disappointment from me.
Can I just add one thing as well? His performance in the League Cup final against Hibernian was one of the most career-ending performances I've ever seen from a Celtic player. It was absolutely, I think it was overshadowed probably by Kyogo's goals and Andrew winning his first trophy. But if you actually look at Starfelt's performance in that final, it was absolutely horrendous.
It reminded of early when he faced, you know, I forget if he was Mitchelland and Alkmaar, but the commonality with all of that is guys that have pace that are going up against him. Remember Ginelli at Hart? I mean, he does not, playing a high line against any kind of pace. I really worry. And we really minimized or reduced that profile for him for about 8-10 weeks there. And it started creeping back in as we started moving more towards playing like Ange wants to play again. And yeah, I don't think he's bringing in Maeda and Hatate and Ediguchi so that we can play more like, you know, 18-19 Rodgers. So,
yeah.
Kevin, Kevin Nesbitt's as quick as me, right? And he not only beat Starfelt, he did that works five aside thing of going back and beating him again. It was awful. And not only that, he actually missed two great chances at the other end. It was just I'm thinking back and I'm thinking maybe Tyler Blackett away in Mulder, maybe, or it was that level of awfulness.
For memory, the AZ Alkmaar game plan in the second leg was literally kick the ball over the top of Celtic's defense and chase after it. I think I'm remembering the correct game. I think it was the second leg, but that was just the way it is. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Starfelt lasts. Maybe he was a plug the gap until the end of the season type signing.
Not with that price tag. I mean, that's on point. Yeah. You don't bring a center half in at Celtic for $4.5 million. I mean, he was second to Kyogo in the rebuild as far as cost. So. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
business,
right?
Yeah, right. We'll hope that he improves at least. Again, this is the beauty of being a Celtic podcast. If you're wrong about a player who you're calling bad, if they prove you're wrong, you're happy. So
that's
where I fall on being wrong on Joe Hart when people get on to me about it. But I guess look, there's going to be some overlap here with the surprise player of the season because I mean, you know, like. Ralston would 100% be my surprise if he hasn't been mentioned already as a standout performer. In terms of the surprise performances, I guess, you know, like Tom Rogic has definitely surprised me in some of the performances that he's put in and his ability to adapt to the high intensity of Ange Ball. And, you know, he's always been one of my favorite players, but I thought, you know, he might be sacrifice for a more hardworking engine within the team. That just hasn't happened for a number of reasons. But if I were to get you to choose someone who hasn't been mentioned so far as a surprise performer, Alan, who would it be?
Yeah, I'll mention briefly Hart, just because what a lovely fellow he is. I mean, I never knew that. He's just absolutely genuinely lovely guy. That must have been a complete surprise to me.
There's hope for you. So guys in their 20s can be pricks. And then when they get into their mid-30s, so there's still hope for you.
Twitter's
no, full. He's Hart is he's the epitome of a player who, if he's playing for the team that you hate, you absolutely hate him because he's completely bought into their ethos. Whereas when he's on your team, you know, he's the guy that you want.
Yeah. No, I think.
Yeah, but he hasn't been a dick. You know what I mean? Like, there's guys that you're happy to have on your team, but they're a dick. But he's not. He's been a really genuinely good guy who you want to root for.
Yeah.
He's been a delight. I think.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. So we've done Rogic. I did Rogic. You know, that ability, as I say, to transition to that eight role. I think it's been a big surprise. Bitton touched on a little bit. I mentioned his defensive stats, but who would have thought they'd have seen Nir Bitton galloping down the left wing with a ball? I mean, it's been brilliant watching him play as an eight against St. Johnstone was hugely entertaining, and he did really well. So that and his defensive stats, as I mentioned, are excellent, and that's incredible because if you think about. You know, Postecoglou's first introduction to Bitton was that ludicrous sending off at home to Midtjylland. And you sort of think, that's your career done, pal. I cannot trust you. I cannot trust you in a big game not to do something stupid. It's been remarkable that he's actually added true value to the team. But yeah, you can't listen in this category. You can't look more than Ralston. He's actually been more creative than Callum McGregor this season. His expected assists and his actual assists are both higher than McGregor's. Defensively, his numbers are good. He's kind of nudging towards the Tierney territory of defensive output. He's been that good. The goals that he scored from nowhere, he's become a talisman. You know, that winner at Ross County, he's become almost an iconic player to have around the team. I mean, who would have thought this wee guy that looks like a high school wrestler, and he, as we said, he runs like a builder. Who'd have thought he'd turn into such an icon? So yeah, definitely the surprise.
And I'm going to throw another defender into the mix here, and it might surprise people that he surprised me, but I think Cameron Carter-Vickers has been a real surprise for the season, because when you see a transfer like this happening, especially the time of year that it happened, it was late in the transfer window, Celtic desperately needed a centre-back, and this guy, Cameron Carter-Vickers, who was at Tottenham out on loan, hasn't really played all that much, looks a little bit overweight when you're looking at his body shape, and he just comes in and absolutely bosses the league in the manner that he has. He's like by far and away the best defender in the league this season. I think because my expectations were quite low in terms of what we were getting, what we've gotten is a player that potentially could be worth double digits by the time Celtic decide to sell him, if they do.
Yeah, he's been tremendous. The only thing that I worry about him relative to who's next to him. I mean, that in a properly designed partnership, I think he could be tremendous at Celtic. It's just I don't think Starfelt complements his areas of weakness, meaning that he's functional on the ball. He's gotten better on the ball, but he's not a ball playing center half. He's very good defending kind of the forward third and defending the box. But aerially, you know, he's good, but maybe not great. You know, so again, if you don't have someone who's dominant in the air next to you, defending crosses and that kind of thing, you know, so I think he's been extremely good. I mean, it's and getting better, I think. My pick's Rogic, mostly because, again, it's an expectations issue. And, you know, once I educated myself on how Ange was going to play, what he demands of his midfielders, I wrote him off. I mean, I did. I didn't think there was any chance that he was going to be able to not only get fit enough, but stay fit enough. And quite frankly, to have the athleticism, even within that context, if he did, to be able to be fast enough, quick enough, to be functional. And I think he, to his credit, he's been functional in the areas of the game that I think most of us would have pointed out were by far his weaknesses, off the ball movement and, you know, pressing and that, those types of things. I think he's both he and the staff deserve huge credit to get him to that level. And you could see it. I mean, he's leaner, the whole squad. I mean, guys look like they've lost, you know, weight where they're just down to lean and mean. And yeah, he's been way better in that role than I certainly expected.
Yeah. And considering he was about to, you know, jump ship and pretty much just sail into the sunshine in Qatar, he decided to stay and fight for his place. And I mean, like he's my favorite Celtic player. I think I said it last year before when everything was bad. So I'm going to take credit when everything's good that he is the man that can make magic happen. He is the magician. So that's it's great to see him performing to the level that he is for Celtic. Before we finish up then, that's the season so far. What about the next half of the season? Obviously, we have had a delay in the Derby match and could be a second delay depending if Celtic decide to request a postponement again. I know it's in the rules that if you have more than four players that are away on international duty that you can request a is three, is it? You can request a delay. So they may choose to do that if the Japanese players plus Rogic are on international duty in February. Hibs up next. Obviously, every game really is important now until the end of the season. It's when the pressure really comes up. With the added depth that we've added in January, what are you expecting from the second half of this season?
So the most important part of all this break has been the time that Postecoglou's getting with these players with no games. That is because we've seen that was not transformative, but in terms of there was a significant jump forward in cohesion and in terms of how the team was playing during that first international break in early October, whatever, late October, whenever it was, in terms of when the team came back and had 2 weeks on the pitch, just focusing on shape and organisation, there was night and day, especially defensively. That kind of unravelled a little bit as we went through December, just through sheer attrition and the fact that we're putting out teams that will probably never play for Celtic again, 11s that you'll never see again, week after week, four, five, six changes were happening game after game. If we can get the players fit, and they can take messages on board, and that cohesion starts. Because at the moment, you know, I think I was musing yesterday in an article I did on Celtic by Numbers that is everybody in the squad underperforming against their expected goals and expected assists, apart from Jota. So could some of that be down to just players just not used to playing with each other? They don't know, oh, actually, I've put it on his wrong foot, or I've not started to read his runs yet, so I've put the ball in, but I was a fraction late with it. These are tiny margins, but these are the little things that come through being able to play with players and train with players week in, week out. Now, we're still in a massively transitional period. That's not going to change between now and the end of the season. It'll improve, and there's still significant risks around. Not just the ongoing injury situation, the risks for more injuries because of the way that we play, and maybe other factors as well that we've talked about, the number of games that we've still got to play, the lack of cohesion and understanding that the team has. So there's still huge numbers of risks, and I suspect, if I'm being absolutely honest with you and speaking from my head, not my heart, those risks and issues it's going to be incredibly difficult to win the league trying to overcome those risks. It really is. It will be incredible if we win this league, given the adversity and issues we've got to overcome to get a coherent team on the pitch. But having said all that, you know, it's going to be incredibly exciting because these players have clearly been bought by the manager. These are not pretend director of football signings. These are manager signings. These are players that he knows that he has bought for a specific purpose in mind in terms of their role in the team. So that's hugely encouraging. Hopefully we'll see a couple more, because I think we need probably a centre-back. We may need another left-back, and we need another wide player. I think probably three players if I'm being greedy. I don't know whether we'll get them. Money's clearly tight. The way that the Maeda deal was structured probably suggests that, as all teams will be, given what's transpired over the last couple of years. So a lot of hope. I think it'll be massively entertaining, but I do think we've got some enormous risks to overcome that. I think it would be a miracle if we did overcome them successfully.
Yeah. Look, I said at the start of the season, and this is in hindsight speaking, I said that if Celtic finished the season within 6 points of Rangers, that's an improvement, because it is. They finished 25 points behind Rangers last year. Granted, you have to take into account that Celtic massively underperformed and the fact that Rangers massively overperformed, but the gap is 25 points. And a realistic person would not have said Celtic would regain the league title this year because of the amount of flux, losing the manager. They didn't have a manager for 3 months. So a realistic person would not have said Celtic should win the league. I think what really has brought about this idea that Celtic might win the league is how much they have improved under Ange. So I think if Celtic finish, again, within 6 to 3 points of Rangers, that gives me enough positivity that things were done right this year, that the team were playing well. They went, depending on how they get on the Conference League, potentially could be a European trophy there. And I mean, that is the base you have now for what's going to come next year with another build, with more players coming in, with a stronger squad. That's ultimately what I want to see. So all I want to see is Celtic continue to improve in the manner they did, potentially win another trophy in the cup, potentially go on a good run in the Europa League conference. And then if the league happens, it happens. But if the league doesn't happen this year, as long as they're within touching distance of Rangers, I think that's a satisfying season.
I'm going to disagree. I can't handle that. Intellectually, I understand and can concede that that's reasonable. But I think the league's there to be won. But I unfortunately, analytically, I share Alan's kind of pragmatic concern, I guess, maybe, which is I think the risk profile, similar to Alan, is very significant. And I think not only the fact that we've had the injuries, but I'm not going to get into it because it's pop psychologist type stuff, but I've been as concerned about Ange's responses to what's going on with injuries as the injuries themselves, meaning that I don't have a lot of faith that the issues that have driven them outside of getting maybe some more depth are going to be addressed. I mean, I think he's going to continue to flog players or let them play when they're hurt, like he's done with Kyogo twice now. So, you know, I that's a huge problem. I think the other issue is, let me step back. So outside of that issue, I think the things that are within our control are going to get better and continue to get better. And even finishing might get better. You know, some mean reversion there, as well as, you know, guys like Maeda looks like he's a really, you know, guy who can finish. My concerns are some of the things that we can't control, i.e. randomness, and the way we're going to start playing, I think, is going to increase that randomness. And then how teams decide to confront us. And I think that teams that pull kind of the Dundee United and decide to have a go, quote unquote, against us are going to get absolutely shredded, that we will put up some really huge score lines against teams where some of our mean reversion, let's see, on an XG basis might be because of a 7-1 on 3XG, that kind of thing, or a 7-0 against a team that tries to open up against us. I think teams that are smarter will realize that they cannot do that, and that if they park the bus, that dramatically will increase their potential for picking up points and even countering against us. Because again, kind of like the if you look at the profile of the players that we're adding, they're not going to help our issues in the air. None of these guys are big or are going to be terribly good at, you know, rebalancing our issues with defending set pieces and really just teams lobbing balls, you know, like you talked about, Enda, what AZ Alkmaar did, lobbing balls over the top, going down the sides into that half space that the inverted fullbacks allow. So I could see a lot of bus parking and high balls. And if I was, you know, a Motherwell or St. Mirren or St. Johnston, I mean, that's what I would do. It's to me the clear and obvious tactical setup, like Livingston's done twice and given us a royal pain in the ass. And some of that might improve a little bit with the change in personnel that we're going to have, but it's probably the lesser evil, so to speak. Because I do think with Hatate coming, and actually we didn't get to that, but I think he might be the most important player that we've added for the second half. He might be the most important player in the second half what he's likely to add. And, you know, opening up at all with people like him and Maeda now coming in, it's just going to be really difficult for domestic teams outside of Rangers to handle that. So that's it.
I should say that Ross Goodwin, Boys Analytics, will be with me shortly. I recorded this earlier on the day talking about Maeda, Ediguchi, and Hatate. Sorry, Hatate, yeah. Name escaped me there for a second. But why do you think Hatate might be the most important?
Because he's got the ability to do things that we need, and who he would be replacing, whether it's at, you know, I suspect it's probably going to be in midfield, but even if it's at left back, he's got the kind of pace, the explosiveness, and the skills on the ball and the pressing, right? So if you kind of drew up a Ange Ball prototype player, he fits it. And so I think that depth in midfield is going to be of utmost importance, obviously with Turnbull out. But as Alan said, even when Turnbull comes back, having that extra athleticism next to a Rogic or next to a Turnbull, depending on, you know, it'll allow rotation and guys not getting flogged. And so that could reduce the injury risk as well, right? So I think that's the linchpin. Whereas Maeda would probably be terrific, but we've got a lot more options there. Jota coming back, hopefully, and hopefully Forrest, and even Mikey Johnston and Abada. I mean, you've got, you know, waves of guys, hopefully, that we can throw at that problem. Whereas in the midfield, you know, in that specific role, I think Hatate is a huge piece.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him. Celtic still haven't formally announced him. He hasn't arrived in Scotland just yet, but hopefully that will happen fairly soon so he can get in and start working with the rest of the players. Alan, you're obviously unique when it comes to the data world and the data in Celtic, because you do your own stuff. So is there anything that you want to highlight now before we move on to the transfers with Ross?
No, I think it's just, as I say, the variance factors that, you know, they have been very much against Celtic. If you look at what are the things that can influence performance that they're almost outside your control of what you do on a football pitch, and it's things like the injuries. I think some of it may be self-inflicted, as James has talked about previously. But still, the disparity in terms of volume of matches that Celtic have missed. So really looking for that to reduce. The fact that everybody outside of Jota is underperforming their expected goals and assists, I mean, you got to think that's going to change at some point, you know, because this has been going on for a couple of seasons now. And it can happen, right? It can happen. And again, there's probably some logical reasons for that. And we talked about cohesion and understanding and so forth, and not having, you know, a settled team on the pitch also will not help in that regard. You know, so I noticed a great fan of mine on the comments, lovely Rangers supporter that follows me around, commented that, you know, where has been the articles on the refereeing decisions? Actually, it'll be out tomorrow. A bit of a catch up. So many games.
Logic get in the way of a good argument.
Yeah. So many games in December, and my guy has, guess what? He's been enjoying the holidays with his family, so he's been a bit slow getting back to me. That's not criticism, by the way. It's just life. So that'll be out tomorrow. But again, if you look at the decisions, the big decisions in big games, the net, you know. Celtic have not got the on the right end of those. So if you were really looking for a bit of, I think there's a bit of hope there in the sense of you wouldn't expect such negative variance across all dimensions in the second half of the season. You would think, but you never know.
Yeah, we shall see. Hopefully we get. And by the way, I'm not writing off the league. I want to make that absolutely clear. I think the league is still there to be won.
Don't backtrack.
I'm just saying that. If you get a couple of cups and you get a good run, the league, you know, was potentially out of our grasp this year anyway. But we'll see. Hopefully they do win the league. Again, delighted to be wrong if they do. Alan, James, 2022, new year, new me. Thanks very much for all that.
You bet. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Enda.
All right, stick with us because I spoke to Ross Goodwin from Boys Analytics, who has done a deep dive on the three Japanese signings, Ryo Hatate, Yuzuki Iriguchi, and Ryo Hatate, Iriguchi, and Daizan Maeda. Yeah. My memory is failing me today. But we also talk about Johnny Kenny as well, who is going to join in the next couple of days from Irish side Shamrock or Sligo Rovers.
Could he eclipse Scales as your blatantly homer favorite or what?
No, I don't think he's going to get the same opportunities as Scales, but he might do. I mean,
oh, he will. Who knows? Yeah.
I'm not ruling anything out in 2020.
He's only two hamstrings away from being number one.
Yeah, exactly. All right, here is my chat with Ross from earlier on. Enjoy it.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Transfer market is in full flow. Celtic got a good bit of their business done early doors with the triple signing of Japanese players coming from the J-League. Daisen Maeda, Itaguchi, Yuzek Itaguchi, and Rio Hatate all coming in from the J-League. Ross Goodwin, a.k.a. Boys Analytics, is on the line with me as we pick through these three guys and what we're going to expect. Ross, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year to yourself, Enda, and thanks for having me on again. Appreciate it.
All good. So, exciting times for Celtic, I guess, making good use of the Japanese market, as we sort of expected might happen under Ange Postecoglou, and when Kyogo Furuhashi came through the doors. Mm-hmm. Bit of a surprise player, and I think he's exceeded everybody's expectations, judging on the fact that nobody really seen what he had done in the J-League. Firstly, before we get into the individual talents yourself in themselves, are you expecting broadly with the three signings coming in now from the J-League that they might do the same?
Yeah, mostly. It's a case of we've seen Kyogo come in and be a huge success, so it's a basis of how much do you trust Ange as a scout, in a sense, as well as a manager. It's pretty clear he understands the game and how he wants to play and the types of players that he needs. So he's been watching these players in the J-League for years now. He knows exactly what they can do. He's came up against them, or he's managed them, so he knows exactly what he's going to get from these players, and he knows they can fit them right into his system. So in my opinion, it's a case of, do you trust Ange as a manager? Yeah, do you trust him as a scout? Is more the question here. And I think the answer so far has been yes. When it's been players he's directly looked at and brought in from the league, he's been an expert in. He's only had Kyogo so far. It's been 100% success rate. But if you're getting 3 out of 4, 2 out of 4 correct, that's still a very good rate of success in transferring players across the globe to a new league, new culture. So he's done a great job integrating Kyogo so far, and I don't see any reason why any of these three players would be any different.
Yeah, there's a broader discussion that we could have if we had an extra 30 minutes to get into, but generally, is it a worrying sign that Ange is the guy that seems to be making the decisions, when if he's not here in a year or two, we might have players that he bought specifically for his system, and then the manager comes in and we have to start rebuilding once again?
Well, this is the issue. You want the kind of, usually you'd have your director of football model, you'd have continuity planning, keeping the kind of structure and the type of football very similar. We can only hope that that's kind of going on in the background, and that if Ange does go, and to be honest, it's looking like he will step up a level after a number of years eventually, the club really need to be ready to bring in someone that's going to play a fairly similar style of football. Otherwise, you're going to need to remove most of the team and bring in players that are more suited. So that's this thing, contingency planning, having lists of managers up to play similar styles at all time. That's this thing normal clubs should be doing on a regular basis and keeping updated lists. But for the moment, we don't need to really worry about that right now. These are players Ange knows, he's brought them in. I guess you could also say, like, how's our own scouting department doing? Well, the case is he knows these players are good. He doesn't need to go to the scouting department. He's watched them already. He's done the most a scout can actually do for these players, which is watch them for probably hundreds, if not thousands of minutes already. So for the short term, this is really good news. Long-term stuff at the club, it's always, well, as we were before we got Ange, it's still questions to be asked, but it's an early sign of intent from Nicholson, who's just taken over, get the transfers done early. We know Peter Law like to wait around to the end of the window to shave a few thousand pounds off, despite the damage that would do long-term. So it's quite good to see the club being a bit more progressive in their actions so far. So maybe that's a promising sign going forward.
Yeah, big time. Well, let's get into the ones that we know are definitely coming. We might touch on Johnny Kenny at the end, who's due to sign from Sligo Rovers in the League of Ireland. We'll start with probably, I think, the most exciting one, and that's Daisen Maeda, who is joining as a left winger or a striker, depending on what system you're trying to play. So let's get into him. What is he going to bring to the table that we don't have already?
Well, he's going to bring a serious backup option to Kyogo that fits the system. Right now, we've been using Machete and Giakoumakis, or really just or Abada, even now that our squad was running so thin. But we've not really had anyone that can maintain the energy and pace of Kyogo's press for the entire game. So I think Maeda will be used as primarily a backup to Kyogo. You can't be running around 90 minutes every 3 days the way Kyogo does, or he's going to pick up injuries like we've seen. So bringing on Maeda for the final 30 minutes of games is something that I think will be quite common theme under Ange over the next few months. He can also be deployed out wide. The issue is he's very different from how Jota plays. Jota is much more technically gifted, creative, beats the man. Maeda is not the most technically gifted player in the world. He's not really one for linking up play. He's very much in the box is where he's dangerous and outside is where he's less dangerous. Not a lot of touches. He's really about intelligence in the box, getting space for himself and getting goals. That's why I think he'll be more prioritised to the central role. This season's been the first season where he's really prioritised that central role, and I think he's scored 14 goals and 1 assist from the central role, which is better than his output out in the wing with less minutes. So I think he's kind of naturally acclimatised to the centre forward role. this probably will likely see the end of Ajayi getting moved on and freeing up the wages. And Giakoumakis might be used as kind of an alternating option for holding up the ball, or if we want to go more route one into the box near the end of games if we're not winning. But very much I do think Maeda is going to be this backup striker. We can see that from his output in Japan. He's 0.6 XG per 90. If he's 0.4 or above in Scotland, he's going to be doing fairly well for Celtic regardless. So we want to see that kind of energy coming on the pitch. And it's just going to be important to have that kind of legs and running power coming on the pitch against tired bodies in Scotland. Kind of much more, maybe the J League, much more cultural. They're usually fitter. They can run longer, better stamina, better diets, things like that. So I'm very excited for Maeda to come in. I think it'll take a lot of the burden off that Kyogo's been holding in his back so far this season.
So in terms of his energy levels, in his underlying data, can you tell how good or otherwise he is at pressing? Because I think that's the key one.
Yeah, so the two metrics I use from the kind of Y-Scout data are the successful defensive actions per 98 and possession-adjusted interceptions per 98. So that's when you're cutting out passing and how many times you're actually getting in the face of the opposition. I think these are good metrics for measuring how forwards defend, because generally we see quite low numbers from players that are attacking. They're not going to be really pressing defenders as much or winning as much ball. Maeda's numbers for these stats are ridiculous. You're talking maybe somewhere close to more than what Ryan Christie was outputting as a number eight, which is where you're probably expecting those kind of numbers. He's got 7.3 successful defensive actions per 90. In Japan, Kyogo was only at 4.8, so it's a huge jump. And possession-adjusted interceptions is 5.46, which again, huge jump from Kyogo's numbers in Japan, which were only 2.38. This guy pretty much built to run. He's very hard to play against because you're pretty much always going to be playing risky first-time passes. You don't want to be put under pressure by him. If you're going to get caught in that final third, you're going to enter the final third transition and you're going to give away key chances. So keeping Maeda away from you is playing fast is the best way to keep Maeda away from you, but teams in Scotland just aren't going to be capable of doing that with the amount of pace he's going to play at and the amount of pressure he's going to be able to put opposition teams under. This is kind of what we've been kind of looking for from Ange. If Jota's not going to play in that left wing, although Maeda might not be the most technically gifted, winning the ball higher up more often, having much more defensive solidity as he's able to do the running back and forwards much more often. And he's obviously got a good goal output in the box as well. So getting the ball in the box more often, getting him on the end of crosses. He's actually I think he's only 5'8". He scores like a ridiculous amount of headers, which I've seen brought up by a few. He's at 0.17 headers per 90, which would put him just about top in Scotland, which is pretty insane for a guy that's only 5'8", but it speaks to the amount of intelligence in his game, running onto the ends of ball so he's not man-marked or generating space away from centre-backs. It's all about movement, it's all about pressing, and this guy's really good at it. This is why Ange just brought him in. He's going to be able to really complement the team very well. I'd be very surprised if Maeda didn't go on to be a success at Celtic. If you're putting in that amount of running, especially against teams in Scotland, you're generally always going to get good output eventually.
And just before we finish up on Maeda, You mentioned that he might be sort of a replacement for Kyogo or a rotation player for Kyogo. What are the chances do you reckon that he'll play Maeda and Kyogo together and then have Jota in a more floating role to complement the running that they're putting in?
Well, it's something more like the 3-5-2 we've seen more recently. Yeah, I think it's quite likely. Ange is, I wrote a piece for the Celtic way back in July looking at how Ange altered his Australia team to move to a 3-5-2. I think he went to the World Cup and maybe got a bit of a reality check on the gap in skill level between his team and the other teams and wanted to try and solidify the central area a lot more. So he pulled the three centre-backs in and put the two and went to the two-striker system. So I think it's something he's very accustomed to using. He's clearly researched it and understands how to use that system. If you're using two pressers, I think it becomes quite effective. You don't really need the wide players pushing up as much. You can have Maeda and Kyogo right on the centre-backs if they're only playing a back-four system. It also gives, we've seen the benefits to having the two strikers there against St. Johnstone. Played the five at the back, low block, but with two players running about in the box, it's a lot more difficult to defend. And we saw Abada getting all sorts of space against St. Johnstone that he wasn't afforded against St. Mirren when they sat in the box for 90 minutes. So I think it's something we could see, especially maybe in Europe. I could imagine Kyogo and Maeda playing, especially counter-attacking football, they'd be extremely effective at it. Very clever players, very fast, and if you put them up against teams, especially when we go up against Bodo Glimt, who aren't going to be fully match fit, you really want to be killing that tie at Celtic Park the first game, because you're not going to get a better opportunity to be a team at that level.
Desperately, Celtic needed another person in midfield, and they got that with Yuzuki Iriguchi, Gucci as he refers to himself. This was desperately needed. Is he going to bring in what Celtic need in that midfield?
Well, I thought his signing was probably the most interesting. It's probably the number six role wasn't probably one people thought of, but Ange just probably had a look at the resources at his disposal and went, we need someone else in there. We need a better rotation option that makes more sense to how we want to play. We brought in McCarthy. I think everyone's at probably a level where he's probably not the most suited to Ange's style. He can't do he's not got the kind of mobility to running, and he's been injured for a good chunk of the time he's been here. And as you get older, those numbers only get worse and injuries will get more frequent. So Iriguchi came in with a few people saying maybe he's not up to the standard. He'd obviously had the early move to Leeds, which was a ridiculous career decision. Don't move to teams if you don't have a work permit. It should be pretty common sense by now. But when he's went back to Japan, his defensive numbers stayed pretty consistent between the time Gambo Saka finished second in the league and when they finished 13 in the league. So defensively, he's doing around 10, 11 successful defensive actions per 90. That's the highest. That if we compare that to the sample size in Scotland, that'd be around the highest. Defensive duels, a lot of defensive duels per 90, around the highest in the league, regardless of if his team are more dominant or less dominant. His passing and creative and offensive output really did fall off in his second season, as quite a lot of people have said. However, as they'd finished second the year previous, they did qualify for the Asian version of the Champions League. So, and it was during kind of more of a COVID season, so they were playing a lot of games very quickly and they just didn't have the squad depth to really deal with it. And it did seem like fatigue really took its toll on the Gambo Saka side. And we've seen that with Ange's Yokohama F. Marinos side. They won the league and then tumbled down the table the next year as a busy fixture schedule took its toll on probably a smaller squad than you would have had previously. But no, I'm fairly confident Iriguchi can come into a six. I don't think he's coming in to be a starter. I think that's something a lot of people will need to get around their heads. I think a lot of people have had him coming in playing the eight role. I wouldn't have him there. He's more sit at the base in the midfield, recycle possession, play more vertical, longer passing. I can see him being used in Europe quite frequently. McGregor's often, especially against higher level opponents in a defensive capacity, has been caught out quite a few times. I think Bayer Leverkusen away, his positioning could just be off slightly just because it's not his natural game. I'd still very much expect Callum McGregor to be starting at the base of that midfield with what it's going to be, Rodric and Hitati in front of him. But no, there's a lot of interest. Iriguchi is a really cheap signing. He's probably not coming in the highest wage. He's got a point to prove. I'm quite excited to see how he gets on the most because he's the one that's probably the most guesswork how he's going to perform on this side. It probably does spell the end for players like Soro and McCarthy. I don't know, because that puts McCarthy behind McGregor, Beaton and Iriguchi, so a fourth choice player for one position. And I don't think Ange is going to go to that double pivot anytime soon or use it very frequently. So it could be a case of get to the summer and start freeing up some wages in that position and use the resources elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And at this stage of the season, the way the team are playing, it's not really about bringing in players that are starters. It's just kind of bringing in better replacements. And if Itoguchi is a step up on the likes of Soro and Ange trusts him to come in and do that job where you can just actually have substitutes that he trusts to put on the pitch, that's a massive bonus for the rest of the season. Ryo Hatate is the third Japanese player coming in. He's coming from Kawasaki, and he's been described as a utility player. And the reason he's described as that is because if you take a look at this guy's career, he's played left back, he's played center mid, he's played attacking mid, he's even played up front at times. So this is a jack-of-all-trades kind of player.
I always found it quite harsh just because he got forced into the kind of left-back position just due to, like, I think they got two injuries to whoever their left-backs were, and he was the best technical footballer they probably had that could fill in. But the season before, he played as a forward the season before, and he was one of the best forwards in the league, and then he goes to left-back, and then he came much more into the central role in the second half of the season. The guy ranks near the top for when he was at left back. He ranks just about top for every single passing metric. When he goes into midfield, he breaks the line. He gets a lot of creativity, a lot of goal threat. So much a ridiculous amount of mobility as well. Because I've got it here, seven successful defensive actions per 90. Again, Ryan Christie's numbers. I think I described him as well. Christie and Juranovic kind of combined when you kind of look at their left back and central data. He does a lot of running. He's very good in the ball. He's technical. He can dribble. He can beat the man. He's exciting. I'm most excited about it. I think he does the most on the pitch, and he's the player we really needed the most. We really needed someone else in there instead of Turnbull and Rogic, especially after losing Turnbull for a few months. He's the one that's going to come right in, and he'll be starting. I'd be very surprised if he isn't starting against Hibs in that central three. Come the 17th as well. He's a very talented player. Not been announced. We've not seen him at Celtic at Lennox Town yet, but hopefully he gets enough days in his legs. And obviously all these players from the J League are coming in match fit. Like their season has only finished last month. It's not like they need a full pre-season to get fit again. They'll be coming in and up to speed very quickly, which is a big bonus as well. It just means you have to manage their minutes till the summer, because that would be a full season and a half of straight football they've been playing. But they've had two or three weeks off now, and they should be able to get right back into it. But no, Hatate is going to be a ridiculous talent in Scotland. I think he is very suited to Ange ball. He can break lines, he can create, he can score, he gets into the box. And if needed, he can play left back, which is what some people seem to want. But I'd rather have my left back be left-footed. I think we've seen the benefits of having Taylor in there over Juranovic and being able to push him much further up the pitch. When you profile Hatate and Juranovic when they're left back, their heat maps are basically identical. They get to about 5 yards before the 18-yard box, then they won't touch the ball any further because they can't go onto their bad foot. He's a very, very talented player, very technical. Can pass with both feet. Seems fairly comfortable with both feet. Very much looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with Celtic's midfield at the minute is that you've got two number eights who are essentially the same player in Tom Rogic and David Turnbull. Not very dynamic, very good on the ball, very creative, but when it comes to running, they just can't get up the yards. Is Hatate someone that's going to come in and have, by what you're describing with Juranovic, he's a very tactical player, but does he have the dynamism to match it as well?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a player probably a bit more technically gifted than Ryan Christie, but similar in style. Very, especially when he played in the A, a lot of running, a lot of defensive work. But I think Ryan Christie, a lot of his game was often let down by maybe a lot of people point to his finishing, but I sometimes thought it was maybe short passing or the basics in his game were always a little bit rough around the edges. Hatate, very technically gifted player. I think he's going to link play very well, especially if the forwards looking to break those lines at the back. He can take on players and see what he's going to do when he gets in the ball. He's going to be able to drive forward with pace. Now, Rogic will complete a lot of dribbles per game, beating the man, but see if he's trying to break away. He can't really break away from anyone with his pace. Hatate's going to be able to take that ball on the counter-attack and be able to actually break away from the retreating defence. So that's going to create a lot more space when we get these transitions and get the ball forward much quicker, which is really what Andrew's looking for. He wants to get that ball forward as fast as possible and get players in the box generating space for those players that are coming forward with the ball. So I think it's going to be a really good match, especially if players like Kyogo. I think Hatate and Kyogo will link up very well coming in.
And just to finish up then, another signing coming in, it's not been confirmed yet, but it will be in the next 24 hours or so, and that's Johnny Kenny coming in from Sligo Rovers in the League of Ireland. I'll give you my broad specs on him because I've seen him play, and then you can tell me what the underlying data says about him. So he's been signed 150,000. That was his release clause with Sligo Rovers. It's a good bit of business. Again, young, cheap talent coming in. He's 18 years old. He's a very raw talent from what I've seen. He's really, really good, good at getting behind the fence and calm enough when he gets into the box. But as a normal 18-year-old is, he is quite raw, and there is space to develop. From what you're seeing in his underlying data, do you think he's going to come into the Celtic B team and then eventually take the step up, or do you think this is just a little bit of business from Celtic stopping Hibs from getting him, and then maybe they can get a little bit of profit when they sell him on?
Well, that's his thing. He shows up fairly well in the data. It's League of Ireland, so it's a step down, but he's also only 18. He's playing against adults every week. I think he's actually quite an accomplished finisher. Like, I think the way he strikes the ball, he hits the ball really, really hard. You can always tell when a striker hits the ball a lot harder than others. He has 0.55 XG per 90, which is obviously League of Ireland's a step down. But if you put a player like Kenny in the B team against fourth tier players, he should be able to probably do better than that. League of Ireland's probably a better standard than the Lowland League, I would imagine. Well, I'm guessing there, but I would imagine it is, since it's the whole of Ireland. And he has a lot, regardless of his age, he's got a lot of shots per 90. He's got 3.25 shots per 90. Like, the most in Scotland, the Scottish League, is 3.77, so he's only a little bit off that. So no matter what, he's got good movement. He gets about the pitch a lot. He gets himself into good positions. It's pretty clear the boy's got a brain on him to actually get away from defenders to get shots away. And he's pretty accomplished with both feet from what I've seen so far. Maybe things to work. He doesn't get on the ball as much, but I guess League of Ireland, a bit more Route 1 football. Sligo Rovers only generally get about 50% possession per game, so they're not exactly wholly dominating games. But no, I was actually fairly impressed. Over four touches in the box per game as well, which is really high. If you compare it to the highest in our league is only 5.5. So he's definitely a big threat. He gets a lot of shots away. He's in the box a lot. And because he's a good finisher, when he's in the box, he's likely going to score. So I'm going to imagine he's going to go into the B team, and they're probably going to start noticing he's probably too good for that level. I suspect in the summer he'll be maybe loaned out to a Premiership team or a Premiership team, maybe your likes of St Mirren's, Livingston's. He actually looked quite a big kind of physical prospect as well. He looked a bit bigger than the usual forwards Ange's been bringing in. But I think there's definitely raw talent there to be developed. And if Celtic and Ange have looked at him and went, we can develop him into a better player, then you've got to trust the manager's opinion on that.
Yeah, I would imagine he's going to go out and loan sooner than the summer. I think it would be a hindrance to his talent to keep in the B team. He would be better off developing in the League of Ireland if that was the case. But I would say the idea is to loan him out to some team and get him first team football for the time being, see how he develops. But he is an exciting prospect for sure, one of the League of Ireland's best young talents. So let's see how he gets on at Celtic when he eventually comes in. Before we finish up, any other positions you think Celtic need to strengthen up in before the January transfer window closes?
I think you kind of need another an 8/10 in there. I put out a thread on Hans Wolf from Mönchengladbach. You can get his data on FB Ref because it's a top five league, so you can have a look at his pressing data. And in the attacking middle and defensive third, he's in the 88th percentile or above in all three of them. Very mobile player. Maybe not as good technically on the ball for the Bundesliga, but against the Bundesliga, so you don't need to be. If you're dropping down to Scotland, your technical ability is going to start to level off. Huge output on goals and assists when he was at Salzburg for three straight seasons when he was a teenager. Got unlucky when he went to Germany, leg break, but I think he's the kind of player that Ange should be looking to bring in, even if it is just loan with an option to buy. He's played at a top level. He's played at teams similar to Celtic where they're dominant in the league, dominant in possession. He's very mobile. He's a big presser. And he's also left-footed as well, so a bit more of a raider kind of attacking midfielder. So if you want to have Hatate and Wolf as kind of your more mobile attacking midfielders, and then Roger and Turnbull as your more technical ones, I think that'd be a good four to actually be going on with. And getting him in now while he's available, and the manager said he's surplus to requirements, he's never going to drop lower in value than he is right now. He's only 22. If you can get a player of that quality in, you should be really looking to do it when you can.
Yeah. Well, we shall wait and see. Talks ongoing between the club and Jota and Cameron Carter-Vickers as well. So exciting times to be supporting Celtic. Ross Goodwin, Boys Analytics, if they want to follow you, it's Boys Analytics on Twitter. And yep. They can get you on the Celtic Way as well, right?
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks, Ross.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, Enda.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.